हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Maharaj Chitraketu is advised that remaining neutral in such trying circumstances as the death of one's son is impossible. Nevertheless, since the Lord knows how to adjust everything, the best course is to depend upon Him and do one's duty in devotional service to the Lord. In all circumstances, one should be undisturbed by duality. As is stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:47, Karmanye vadikaraste mafaleshu kadachana. Ma karma falahetu urbur mate sangost vakaramini. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. One should execute one's devotional duty, for the results of one's actions should be dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16-11.
Which quality we need to develop in order to get to that level of consciousness?
Basically, it means you have it's a furtherance of faith that the Lord is the one that'll take care. The Lord is taking care of these things, because we means it's a natural thing as individuals, as people, will be affected by the surroundings, especially us as jivas. We're So, but the point is that being affected, that's not actually the problem. What's the problem is forgetting Krishna, not depending upon Krishna. That's the problem. So then, if in these difficult situations, it says, nevertheless, since the Lord knows how to adjust everything, the best course is to depend upon Him and do one's duty and devotional service to the Lord. Right? Like that. So that makes sense. So that's the point. So it's not that it may not have an effect, but then you're not affected by it because you surrender to the Lord. It's not that, oh, I'm not affected by this on our own. That's not going to happen.
Yes.
It means you can do that, but then the heart becomes very hard. So you are affected.
Yes.
Right? So, but the point is we depend upon Krishna, then that's where we're unaffected. So it's like, well, when we connect ourselves to the person who's unaffected, then we don't become affected. Right? Just like if we take shelter of the Lord who's above the three modes, we're not affected by the modes. Right? If we take shelter of the person who's always, in bliss, then we'll come to that platform. The whole idea is that in all circumstances, we connect ourselves to Him. That's what we're trying to do. Right? So it's all just various ways of trying to show us how we can take shelter of Him. Since He's unlimited, then the elements of that unlimitedness is unlimited. Right? So then by taking shelter of Him, then all those different qualities, those then attain their state of perfection. Otherwise, on their own, you may develop these qualities, but we see is they don't enhance Krishna consciousness. We take it that, oh no, these qualities then they bring us closer to Krishna. No, they're just better tools. Just like, let's say, if I have a nice kitchen, in one sense, I can say I'm closer to better cooking. But in reality, it's the cooking that is there, not the quality of the kitchen. If I know cooking, then the better kitchen has an advantage. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say I take a 3-star chef and I stick him out in the field with a few bricks and a tin can. He'll make something very nice, but it's difficult and it'll be simple. How much can you do in a tin can? Right? But if I put him into a fancy kitchen, then he'll do even more. But so it's that quality of being connected to the Lord that is actually what's working. So now, if I may have a great kitchen, but if I'm not a good cook, it's still, I may get more proud and I may do more of a mess up. You know? Like that. So that's the whole thing. You know, it's just like, let's say I am driving a car, right? And I go to the corners, I do all the different things, and it's safe and everything's nice, okay? And I'm, you know, nothing of a special driver, but okay. Now, someone gives the opportunity to drive, you know, one of these, you know, I say hyper supercars or something like that. Now, what is the chance that I won't be safe? You know, because I think I'll put more, I can go faster, I can do this, I can stop in a shorter time, and it doesn't work. But now let's say you take someone who's a race car driver, whichever he's in, it'll be safe. You understand? So that's a very, very important element to understand, is that these qualities, when they're connected to Krishna, they become wonderful, and what they're not, they're stumbling blocks. Even though we give a great value to them. Oh, if someone's very kind, then that's very great, but they're kind to anyone. And so then they spend time with non-devotees and giving their kindness to places where then they may get affected by that. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that because they're kind, now they're great devotees. Because there's so many kind people in the world, but they're not devotees. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that we take it that we have the physical, you know, situations and mechanics. Then we have the good qualities that are supposed to go along with those. Right? But from the materialistic platform, those good qualities, because they're subtle, that's considered the higher principle. And so if you have that, then everything's done, because the idea is that the good qualities will make the external go better, which it does. But if we're looking at the external going better, therefore we have the good qualities that goes better, that's actually our focus, then we'll actually think bhakti, because we're taking it as an anga of karma, then we'll also do better. Right? So for the karmis, then that will have an effect like that. You know? Does that make sense? Because they're using karma as an anga of bhakti, so naturally it will be better. Right? Does that make sense? Because if I'm using good qualities, then the sentiments of bhakti will come out better. But if I'm engaged in devotional service, not in karma, then karma and that is used in Krishna's service. And these qualities are used in Krishna's service. So the service is independent. It's just that because of our identification with it, we'll consider if the externals are going great, then the bhakti is going great. But actually the bhakti is the devotion and the faith, not the mechanics that we're using or the qualities we're using. Right? So the qualities are important. Just like the proper execution of the activity is important. But as Prabhupada points out here, from what Krishna says, is that the fruit of the activity is not ours. We have a right to do our duty, but we can't say that the fruit of that is ours. Right? And never consider that we're the cause of it. You know, I've done my duty, that's why I got the result. No, you did your duty, and then Krishna being pleased with that, that's why you got your result. So it's this whole thing of becoming Krishna conscious, that in all situations and activities we see that it's about Krishna. Because our tendency is that it's about ourselves. We're doing it. We're the cause. Because if I'm the controller, I'm the cause. But if I'm not the controller, that means someone else is the cause. Right? And why am I attached to the result? I'm the controller. I did it. It's my result. Why? Just because I have it? Because you can enjoy it. So that's why it says then, you know, it's not for us. It's not ours. And we're not the cause. So that cuts out, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? I should do my duty. That gets me out of ignorance. Right? Never be attached to not doing our duty. That also keeps us from going into ignorance. Do you understand? So it's the whole, in one sense, it's very simple. It's just, in all circumstances, be conscious of Krishna. And since there's unlimited circumstances, that's why then the Shastras are approaching that one point. You know, always remember Krishna, never forget, from so many different angles. What are the various ways you can remember Krishna? What are the various ways to avoid forgetting Krishna? Is that... Yeah? Okay. The Sutrakar specifies that Adhikarna 7 and onwards until the end of the Pada 1 deal with the refutation of the Nyaya school of thought. Right, so then we've dealt with karma, we've dealt with the shankhya, we've dealt with yoga, and now we'll go and deal with nyaya. Right? Nyaya, synopsis of nyaya, the philosophy of logic and reason. Right, so there's a difference between nyaya as one of the 14 books of Vedic knowledge and nyaya as a philosophy. Means the mechanics of the two are the same, but one is being used as it's just a logical system. And the other is makes it into a philosophy. Let's say like the science of cooking. It's a science. It can be used in any area. But some people may take it as a philosophy. It doesn't mean that the science of cooking changes. It just means that now you're using it in a philosophical way when actually it's just supposed to cook lunch. Right? So nyaya is supposed to assist in the process of applying philosophy. Not that it is a philosophy. Yes?
In this particular presentation of Vedanta Sutra, I'm not quite sure why we started from the highest, refuting the highest, like we dealt with Mayavadis, then Karmis, then Yogis, then the Shank, and now we're coming to the... Because obviously the higher includes the lower level, but then we go through and...
Yeah, the detail, down. Because we don't see that it concludes. It does. Means if you start with the higher and you can grasp that, you get an overall concept of what's going on. Then, by going into these others, you get into detail. Just like surrender to Krishna. Yes, I'll surrender to Krishna and all that. And that was great, you know, like that, you know, the temple program was really nice and all that. So, hey, you know, hey, so what do you think? Let's go hit the beach and, you know, like that. So you don't catch it. That part's also part of, you understand? So when you get the bigger picture, you get that and you get the overview. But then the detail, then that's the... Does that make sense? So that's all these fine details are there. Like here, you know, the Prabhupada's mentioning that point of how all these things aren't ours. Because we'll consider, no, because I did that service, then the results are mine. They're not. Right? And that I should get some facilities from that. No. You know? And so then what's going to happen from that? I'll do my duty because I want the results, or I won't do my duty because I'm not going to get the results. Is that, you know, so all these different things will come up. So it's just another way of looking at it. Does that make sense? So when you have the overall, then you can start, then the details then fit into place, because that's the whole concept in the descending process, is that you get an overview of the thing. It may be in a very... essential or fundamental, so that it always applies, right? Does that make sense? Because you're getting down to the simple that'll always be there. See, the problem in the ascending, they'll give you a simple, but then as you start to apply it, it gets more and more complex, the situations, it doesn't apply anymore. And so then you get confused because you need new formulas and they're always changing and they can't see the connection. Well, in the Vedic, you start off with that simple formula that it always applies in all times, all places, all circumstances. And it's explained in a very straightforward way, so you can catch, you know, the basic principle of it. Like Prabhupada says, relationship, process, result. So now, with that, now you can apply it on anything. Now, as you go, it gets more, it has so much sophistication, but it doesn't get complicated. Right? Complicated means there's all kinds of things that don't really match. Sophisticated just means it's more and more developed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, let's say, that gargoyle at the Gurukul. Right? It's simple because it's just an open drain, but it's sophisticated because it's a dragon with a yaksha. You know what I'm saying? So like that, it has that aspect. But the modern, let's say, like the drain in the courtyard of the temple, that's complicated. Because if anything goes wrong, you have to dig up the whole courtyard to fix it. So let's say the drain around the lotus building, that's easy. If it gets clogged, you just get in there with, you know, some things and pull it all out and you're done. That's simple. So that's the Vedic, is what's straightforward is simple. And what needs so many things is dependent upon so many other things. That's complicated. Right? Isn't it? Because otherwise when someone asks about something, you say it's complicated. It's because you can't explain it. It doesn't mean you can't talk about it. That you can do for hours, but you can't explain it. So that's complicated. So that's the thing that throws off the person in the modern, in the material consciousness, whether it's Vedic or not, is the simplicity of the descending process throws them off. Because for them, they know so much, they can do so much, they can talk for hours about it. So it throws them off that you can explain that hours of talking and years and years of contemplation and study in like one sentence. It freaks them out. Because then it makes it seem like it's nothing. Does that make sense? Because they want to, you know, feel, there's a sense of accomplishment. But the point is, yes, the accomplishment is that you know that, and then you can connect so much more. So you're more advanced in that area of knowledge or practice because you know more detail, but the fundament is the same. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the... Is that okay?
So then you can see that Gautama's Nyaya is been derived from this 14 books of knowledge, one of the Nyaya, that way.
Gautama's Nyaya, no, it's one of the 14 books.
It is one of the 14 books.
Yes, but as Nyaya, not as a philosophy. See, Gautama's just taken it and then put it together and explained it very nicely so that it has a structure. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a branch of Vedic knowledge. You know, it's just like the yoga system is already there, but then it's being, you know, gotten into the detail and being documented by Patanjali, like that. So it's one of the 14 books. It's not that he's taken the 14 books and made it. It's one of the 14 books.
Okay.
He's just taken it, documented it very nicely so it can be used for discussion, but then making a philosophy out of it, hot like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Okay. The Nyaya system of philosophy was established by the sage Gautama. This philosophy is primarily concerned with the conditions of correct knowledge and the means of receiving this knowledge. Right? So that means any school is interested in that, so every school uses Nyaya. But they don't use it as a philosophy, they just use it as a mechanical tool of logic. Yes.
And how can you use that as a philosophy?
Because you think that through logic I can understand everything, and therefore, like, so I logically go through, and so I see how everything is in its reality, and then from that I'll have the proper knowledge. So I'll apply it on everything and try to understand who I am.
So we said that after that. Using that system, we can get up to Brahman level of realization?
You can get up to you could say the cusp of Brahman realization. It means you understand that Brahman is eternal and unchanging, unlimited. That kind of aspect. That's all you can understand. You can't understand more than that.
And neti-neti is their system?
They're basically using it. I don't think that they focus on that as much. That's another application of the same thing. Like you said, they all use logic. It's just that they'll take it that the logic itself is enough. You know, it's like, let's say it would be like a scholar who thinks that his scholarship, through that he can understand anything. Because they're so good in one area, they feel they could understand any area. But then, if that's true, then why would they have a degree in a particular area? It should be, you study any area, it doesn't matter, and once you come to mastery of that, then you're given that degree where you know everything. Right? But they're not. They know this one area. But due to false pride, they think, I have the intelligence, I can understand everything. But if that is the case, then why doesn't their university allow them to, you know, speak on anything? They don't. Absolutely don't. And within the academy, they don't allow. You know? So that's the whole point, is that it is limited. So here they're just using the logic itself. It's not necessarily being specifically applied. It's that the logic itself you can understand. That's why it's the lowest of all the philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Because then at least Vaisheshika is logic applied with atomic theory. Right? Mm-hmm. You know.
So they basically achieve a theoretical understanding, but at least in yoga we have that they actually come to know that they are soul, you know, at least something is there.
No, it means Nyaya can understand you're the soul. The difference is that in yoga they'll apply, include the mind in this. Otherwise, mm-hmm. the first three schools only use the intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Only with yoga then you're including the mind. Right, and then we see in the other three schools, then above that they include the mind.
Hmm.
Yes.
So it's like it becomes the identity. I'm a servant of this system. I'm that system. Is it so?
What I say is that they're identifying that I'm intelligent, and through intelligence I can understand. So you could say. It's a classic position of any intellectual, right? Because when you get into the others, then it's more specific. You know, does that make sense? So logic just means you're logical in your thought. So that, what you could say, applies to all scholars. But then if you're going into atomic theory or analysis of the elements or the yoga or the karma or the Vedanta, then you can say it's more specific. Right? With that. So this is the basis, just that somebody feels I'm smart, therefore I know everything.
The primary identification is with intelligence.
Yes, it's with intelligence. Because that's the thing. Someone who's logical, he prides himself in being intelligent.
Okay.
So, yeah. This philosophy is primarily concerned with the conditions of correct knowledge and the means of receiving this knowledge. Nyaya is predominantly based on reasoning and logic, and therefore is also known as Nyaya Vidya, or Tarka Shastra, the science of logic and reasoning. Using systematic reasoning, this school of philosophy attempts to discriminate valid knowledge from invalid, right? So their idea is, when they discriminate, you know, what's the actual core value, a valid knowledge, then they'll actually know what's going on. Right? Yes.
They accept the Vedas.
They accept the Vedas, yes, they're one of those. But they'll be in those first four schools where they'll only take how much of the Vedas supports what they're doing.
So it's the ascending process.
Yes, that means all the six schools are ascending. Like that. Unless it's Vaishnava Vedanta, then it's descending. They have their, you know, they can relate to the descending process because they have their guru, so in this case Gotama, and so you're hearing the knowledge from him. So in that way, that's shabda, that's authority, that's this and that. But they'll interpret everything in accordance to what Gotama says. So if there's any contradiction between the Veda and Gotama, they'll pick Gotama. Right? Well, then the Vaishnava Vedanta, if there's any discrepancy between what I'm perceiving and what the Shastra says, I'll take Shastra. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole difference. That's why it's important to see this, because we see this even in the scholarly field, or the social, political, economic field. People will accept the Veda if it supports their position, but if it doesn't, then they immediately want to, it's old, it's archaic, oh, that's a different time, it doesn't apply to me, or, they have a whole list of ways to try to push the Vedic thing aside so that their perception, their value stays as the central primary point. And then you add Krishna consciousness to that. Because, in other words, I'm okay, I'm great, but then because of the surroundings and other people and situations, then I'm having a hard time. So Krishna consciousness then can solve that by explaining what's going on and giving me tools on how I can apply my greatness in any situation and therefore be fabulous. Right, but we see as that means it's bhakti mixed with karma. It's not pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's then what we're trying to discriminate here, is how to understand what's actually the primary and what's secondary, because that's the confusion. We think that my value is what's primary, and other things then are secondaries, they all fit into that. Now, according to Chatur Shloki, that when you understand that what you value is connected to Krishna, in other words, it's Krishna, and then you happen to be connected to it as a value, then it works. But if it's no, I have a value, and then I connect everything to that, because the value is the main central point, then it takes on a material quality. Now, if there's that devotion to the Lord that's there, and one, in so many other areas is very nicely situated, then we'll say it's karma misra bhakti. But in the area that is being applied, whether it's karma misra or it's bhakti misra karma, then one has to see. In other words, if there's some modern social construct that we may be interested in or attached to, and the Shastra opposes that, and then we'll say that we have to change this or it has to be defined differently, that's not karma misra bhakti. Right? That's materialistic. Other aspects of our life, that's devotional. So that's what we mean by karma misra bhakti, is that if you take our overall life, it's devotional with some karma still attached. But the areas that are karma, it's that they are karma. We have to be able to see, is are we seeing them in relationship to, or we're seeing them instead of, as opposed to. Right? So when we're opposing the Vedic version, that's a dangerous position. Because you can't oppose, reality. Right? Like that. But if it's just a matter we're performing devotional service, we're a little attached, like, Chitta Ketu Maharaj was saying. There's a calamity, and so there's some attachment and that. That's just, we still have something left over. And so it's not taken as seriously as long as we surrender to the Lord. But when we won't surrender to the Lord in that area, and we expect everything to adjust because our value is actually more prominent, that's going to be a stumbling block on the devotional service. The other one will just slow things down, right? It just makes it a little slower because you're not concentrating on, means you could always remember Krishna, it needs to be developed, but then not forget Krishna, that's not actually the distraction. So much, right? But in this other, it's not remembering Krishna is the focus here, because you don't want to accept the Vedic version. Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj, when you say that Vaisheshika, they use intelligence, like the first three schools, Karma, Mimamsa, Sankhya and Vaishya, they use intelligence. Yoga is based on mind, and Nyaya basically also accepts the particle theory of the Vaisheshikas. So can we say that they can be also grouped into, that they use intelligence for the Nyaya?
No, when I say the first three, that means Nyaya, Vaisheshika, and Sankhya.
Yeah. So Nyaya, is also accepting the atomic theory. And they...
No, but I don't get what's the point.
Because
when we say the first three
so then
are basically using just intelligence.
Yeah. And then what is Nyaya using then? Also intelligence.
The first three, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, and Shankhya.
And Karma Mimamsa?
Karma Mimamsa is the fifth one.
Yeah, but it falls into which then category? I'm just ordering it. Even there?
There means they're using the mind and intelligence.
Okay.
Like that. It's not that they don't all use it, the intelligence. It's just that just by intelligence only, you don't require the emotions, the feelings, and anything like that. The first three schools don't address that. Only yoga then starts to address control of the mind. That yoga system's used in karma.
So because when one doesn't use much of the emotions and one uses intelligence, so can we say that preaching those people who use intelligence is much easier than those who use emotions?
Someone who's preaching, they're using intelligence.
No, the group whom I'm preaching.
The group to whom you're preaching, they use intelligence. Is that easier than emotion? It's like, okay, let's say I have a cow dung patty on the wall. And so it's still kind of wet. And there's a cow dung patty that's from last week. It's already been taken off the wall and it's in a pile and it's dry. Which one of those is less stool?
Okay.
It means each has their own insanity. So it's just a matter of what's the problem, because one identifies with the intelligence, one identifies with the mind as their identity.
Because those who are emotional are being carried away and they don't come into Krishna consciousness, they just go away. That's the reason why I thought.
Yeah, but those who are too intellectual can't understand Krishna consciousness and it came up and, you know, slapped him in the face. See what's happening here? We're taking it because I'm intelligent, I can understand. That's the whole point. It's the exact fault that we've been speaking on. They think because we're intelligent, we can understand everything. No, it's because you're intelligent, you actually can't understand anything. It's so simple. You know? Like I was saying once, is that in Ratha Yatra in Calcutta, you have the big Ross there, really big. And they're going around a corner of, I think, Lansdowne and Rosh Bihari. Whether they're called by that anymore or not, I have no idea. If they're not, Uttam Kumar Bhattacharya, Banerjee Road, like that. And, every year they change the names. Okay. So, in any case, we are going around the corner there, and they have a boulevard right in the middle. And because people like to go across it, then the corporation then put up walls there, so people couldn't cross at that point. So when they went around the corner, they misjudged and they ran into the wall at an angle, right? So, but they couldn't get out of it. And then, the police chief is there, all the police guys are there, so many guys are there that they bring in we call them tow trucks. You know, the big trucks that have the crane in the back, they lift the cars up and stuff like that. So they hook that onto the chariot, and they lifted it, and they were trying to do this, and they could not, all of them together, right? All the king's horses and all the king's men, they couldn't get it together, right? So then they're doing all this, and they're this and that, and they're trying to figure it out, and they all have different this and move this, and they try everything. None of it works. Then after watching this for a while, this one devotee, very straightforward, practical guy from Australia, like a, out in the outback, like a farmer out there. Then he walked in and just said, look, hey, do that. And he started yelling, screaming, do this, do that. And within, a few seconds, he had figured it out. Because it was so obvious. But all these guys who are so qualified, because police chief means what? He's an IPS officer. That means the smartest guys in India, right? No? Yeah. They couldn't figure out. Other guys couldn't figure it out. So he can figure it out because he just sees through what's actually working. because we're thinking it's the intellectualization that makes me see. No, it's the being able to appreciate and see the central formula at work. You understand? Like Sambandhavide and Prayojana. Being able to see that, you know everything. But having big intelligence where you can see so many different things and all that, but can't see that, that's not actually intelligence. It doesn't mean we don't have intelligence, it just means we're not intelligent. Does that make sense? Like someone who's a good cook, then they can function in this fancy kitchen. Right? But the person who has all kinds of money and has an interest in that and sets up an amazing kitchen, it's all the best, you know, the stove is from here and the oven's from there and the pans are from this and these are from that. You know, it's whatever's the top in the world. They get it. They got it in their kitchen. So anybody who has a little bit of an interest in the kitchen, whoa, wow, look at that. Where do you get this? Oh, this is from here and there's a story behind it. But the simple thing, they can't cook. So that's the disease, is that the intellectuals, they can't understand Krishna consciousness because they want it to be complicated and it's not as simple. So it's not that the intellectuals, otherwise all the people at the university wouldn't be, they be our leading preachers? No. Yeah. Right? So that's the whole thing. They're not there. Big businessmen, they're not there. The big politicians, they're not there. You know, the big, you know, how you say, guys into social work and all that, they're not there. So anybody who has this big ego and they think that through that you see everything, right? The guy who's into, you know, all the social issues and all that, and they think that's how you view everything. They don't understand people and relationships and all this. No, it's the political, or it's the influence, or it's the money, or it's the intellectual. None of them can understand anything. So the simple Joe off the street, he's the guy that understands. Right? Now, if someone's too sentimental, they can't understand either because they're identifying too strongly with that. So when that gets there, then there's a problem. So in any case, if the intelligence gets too out of place, or the emotions get too out of place, then you can't understand anything. The path is in the middle. Right? So that's what we're saying. You have the path of devotional service, and on one side you have the sahajras, means overdone emotions, and on the other side you have the smartas, which means overdone intellect. Yeah? Okay.
Yes. There are six sisters, Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, and Yoga. Like one philosophy is ahead of how yoga comes, how Karma Mimamsa comes after yoga. So I'm not getting
it. How it comes after yoga, because they accept the whole, all the aspects of the Veda. Any verse of the Veda, they accept. So Uttari Mimamsa, Purvi Mimamsa, they both accept. Yoga means the first four. Then they accept the Shastra. They're based on Shastra, but they only base their philosophy on those aspects of Shastra that support what they want to get.
But yoga's goal is consciousness.
Consciousness of what?
You have to have a supreme consciousness. But like,
and then what are they going to do with the supreme consciousness?
It's like they want to merge the like.
Yeah, so merging into the supreme, how conscious is that? How smart is that? You understand?
You said, Maharaj, yoga, like yoga is used in karma. Karma means like mind is used, like you said just now. Yoga is used in karma. I don't understand that.
I don't know. I was saying logic is used in all these systems. That's what we were discussing. So you have these schools, but we're getting into fine points here. Is that about the intelligence? This is not an overview of that. You know what I'm saying? So we're just saying is that they rely more on the intelligence. While then the other three schools, they use the intelligence, but they also include the element of the mind. While the first three schools don't really address the mind. Is that... So then here and there, sambandha. Okay. So then chit, achit, and ishwara. Okay, so chit, according to the Nyaya and Vaisheshika systems, the soul is a unique substance, of which all desires, aversions, pleasures, pains, and cognition are qualities. There are different souls in different bodies. The soul is indestructible, eternal, and consciousness is the accidental attribute. Because it is not limited by time and space, the soul is also seen as infinite or all-pervading. So you can see right here where their philosophy is falling apart, just their understanding of the soul. So consciousness is accidental. It's actually just they're all-pervading and infinite, so there's no need. But for some reason, consciousness comes into play, and therefore then you have the material phenomena, this, that, blah, right? There are many souls because one person's experience do not overlap those of another person, right? So then they see by logic there has to be different souls because your experience and my experience don't overlap. There can be overlap, but there can also not be overlap. So therefore we understand there's different souls. So we can see is they're just, they have a particular measure that they're using, that it's logical from all stands, which we'll get into how that works. And so then, because of that, then we can say, okay, this is the truth. So from this logical system, they can tell that there's differences of souls. But we see these other aspects of that, then they can't apply the logic properly to it. But, you know, it sounds good. Achit. Matter is coexisting with God and is the material cause of the universe. Ishwara, God is entirely transcendental to the soul and the material nature. He is not the material cause of the universe, but the operative cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. God does not create the world out of nothing or out of himself, but rather out of eternal atoms of space, time, mind, and soul. Right? So where do those come from? That's not then explained. So, in other words, they're trying to... clever. Using the holes to fill the pot. So you can see as they're catching some points about the eternality of the soul. All right, the Shastra says the souls are all pervading. That means there's unlimited souls, so they're everywhere. You know, it's like mosquitoes during Gaur Purnima. They're all pervading. You know, it doesn't mean one mosquito is taking up everything. It just means there's unlimited mosquitoes. So, and so these things are there, but they're not able to put them all together because they have a problem with, you know, God being the cause of the universe. And that the universe is coming from him. So he sees we have the same weakness that's there. It's just that they may not get into explaining that well. As you go up in philosophies, they have more explanation of these things. Mm-hmm. Right.
Can we say that they partially atheistic and partially deifying God?
Yes. That means, in other words, there's pure devotion and then there's some form of misunderstanding. So pure devotion is the actual thing. And anything else, if it's not pure devotion, there's something mixed with it that makes it not work properly. So then deifying is a very standard. It means, in other words, if there's any reverence for God and you don't understand how he's made everything and it's coming from him and it's his laws, if you don't understand this and karma and all these things, then you'll have to deify. So how much you know, it means deification will be there, but it's a matter of, okay, you accept karma or not, or this or that, bring them a little closer. Right? So in the Vedic philosophy, he should be a little closer, the other ones he's farther away. But they'll always have these same faults. That's what we're seeing, is that it's the same basic faults, it's just how it comes out. You know, so it's like, say, somebody has a eating disorder. So that's a generic thing. Now, specifically what they do in their eating disorder, now that's unique. Some guy just eats donuts. That's all he does. Someone else, then he just eats pizza. You know, someone else, then they, you know, like that. So it has various manifestations. So then they'll give it this general definition. But at the same time, because they're confused, they can't understand what's the common point. So then... Is that?
They consider over here even time, mind and soul to be atoms. Atoms. You see? Eternal atoms. Maybe four kinds of eternal atoms. Something like that.
Yeah. That's why I said it's an accident. Consciousness is an accidental attribute.
Accident.
Yeah, it means it's not supposed to be there. They're just atoms. But then the whole problem is if you're just an atom, then why, what's the big deal? You know, that's the whole problem, because they're so disturbed with the anxiety of problems in the universe, then if you get rid of those problems, then they'll consider that happiness, right? Because that's what we're discussing, sukha. Sukha means getting rid of misery. So they consider that will be ananda, but ananda is a different definition. You know? You know, it's just like, if I get rid of the uninvited guests in my house that are just harassing me, then by getting rid of that, then I'll be in Vaikuntha. You know, there's two different things. Yes.
Maharaj, if you see the scientific theories and also this theory, they both have a commonality that consciousness is accidental.
For all these schools, then the soul comes from matter, and so matter is unconscious. That means the soul would be unconscious.
But if all of them are in thinking themselves intelligence, but how accidental matches intelligence? Because intelligence means they have to know reason for everything.
Yeah, but that's the problem. That the only Vaishnava philosophy is actually intelligent. Everything else is not. They only claim they're intelligent. See, as if you actually are intelligent, do you need to prove it?
Yeah.
Yes or no?
Yes.
You do. let's say who's the big rich guy in India these days?
Ambani.
Okay. Now Ambani, let's say he's in some place that nobody has ever heard of him. You know, he's out in some village out in Himachal Pradesh up in the, you know, Himalayas somewhere. And then they bumps into, and they ask, oh, who, you know, what's your name, Ambani, and this and that. They don't know and all that. And they're asking, oh, you have to go up there and like that. And, you know, because you're a guest, you need some money to, you know, to get for the boat and things like that. And he said, no, I can take care of it. Does he have to prove? No, he's rich whether he proves it or not. You understand? So that's why the Vaishnavas, they're humble. Because they have all knowledge, they know everything, but they don't need to prove it because they have Krishna. Well, someone who's not actually that intelligent, they don't have all knowledge, then they identify that I'm an intelligent person and try to establish that. You understand? So the bigger the false ego about their intelligence means the less they know. You know, it's the empty pot philosophy, right? Means that you have an empty, if you have a pot full of water and you hit it, you get a little doom. But when you hit a pot that's empty, it makes a loud noise. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that in the material world, those that don't have the knowledge, then they make a big scene that they're very intelligent. And because nobody actually knows, then they have more intelligence than the others. But, you know, it's like in the village of blind men, someone with one eye, he's the king. Right? So that's the point. We're not talking about real. So that's why Vaishnavas have the real intelligence. They don't have to prove it. You know, Rupa Goswami, the big Digvijay Pandit, comes, and you know, and I come to argue, like, what's your purpose? I just want to defeat so that I'm known for defeating. He just wrote him a thing that he's defeated. Who cares? He doesn't want to waste his time like this, because it's not like he's trying to understand. I want to understand the absolute truth, so I want to have a discussion on this and then see, you know, what knowledge I have. I want to compare it to what you have, because I've heard you're a scholar, so I want to know as I'm moving forward. That's like, you know, the sannyasis at Varanasi. They want to know. So then when they have a discussion, or Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then they have a discussion, then they find out. But here he just wants to be known as the best, you know, argumentative logician. You know, so he's victorious because of that. So he's just very good at it. So then why does Rupa Goswami want to get involved? Right? But Jiva gets involved because you can't insult our guru who knows everything and like this. So he argues with him and completely defeats him. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to be careful here, is that understanding that because it's intelligence doesn't mean that that's why it's so valuable. Right? It's intelligence is, if it's any value, its real value is its use in the Lord's service. Right? So what do we mean by value? Everything has a connection to Krishna because it's coming from Krishna. That's what they can't understand. So therefore then a value to something is its ability to be connected to Krishna. Right? So now this thing can be connected to Krishna under what circumstances? So those circumstances then you try to create and then there's an involvement in that circumstance. Right? So therefore if you have in your duties have a connection with that item in those circumstances, then you're involved. But if not, you don't. Does that make sense? You know, like the brahmachari. Okay, here's an opportunity to make money in a business and this and that, but it's not his field of action. Therefore, he doesn't do it. He tells someone else, and then they make the business. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, it has that connection. But here in logic, then... they can't see everything connected to God. These essential points don't work for them. Right? Because then that means God has all these things come from God. That means the material energy is coming from God. That means then the imperfections of the material energy are in God, so then God's imperfect, but God has to be perfect. So he can't have any material energy in him, therefore he can't be the source of it. Right? They can't understand it's his energies, and these energies transform. The only reason is imperfection. The imperfection is our imperfection. So just as if the jiva can go from imperfect to perfect, then where does that principle come from? And since God's always perfect, that means there has to be something that's going from imperfect to perfect. And if we're, you know, talking about creation, then the reverse of that. So that means it has to be the energy. If the jiva is an energy of the Lord and can go through that transformation, why can't other energies? Right? But the Lord doesn't, because it's his energy. So he is the Shaktiman. He's always the shelter of the energies. So then what does it come back down to? If there's a problem, who's the cause of the problem? Us ourselves. And that's the last thing we want to hear. You know? It's got to be someone else. And if we can't blame it on anyone else, at least we can blame it on God.
That's Satan.
You understand? So this is where these weaknesses in the philosophy will come. Right? So now we see is in the Upanishads, these great sages, then they would hear a few things. And then from that, contemplating that, then they would understand everything. Or you see in the Vedas, then a small group of verses, or even sometimes one verse, will be attributed to one rishi. Right? That means that rishi contemplated that verse and all the details of that verse, and through that he became perfect. Right? So, because there's contemplation going on. But the tendency is, especially in this age, people don't think so much. You know, or they think too much, right? In other words, what they shouldn't be thinking about, they think about too much. What they should, they don't think at all. Right? So then from that, then they don't try to connect things together. Right? Now, the Veda will then discuss the detail of every possible deviation there could be. Right? So we see in previous ages somebody to have, you know, a deviation here or there. And once you clear that, then they become, you know, greatly realized. You know, it's just like that, yeah. Does that make sense? That's why you have these discussions with great personalities. And there'd be one point, and when that point is defeated, then they understand the whole thing, and they become self-realized. right? Because there's only one problem or a few problems, or that one problem with a few details. Right? And so then like that, all the different angles, possibilities that are there, that's dealt with. Just like there's 8,400,000 species of light, therefore all the aspects of philosophy are also dealt. And please in the future don't say, you said that the 8,400,000, then they have all the philosophy. Don't do that. Right? Does that make sense? We're saying like in karma, there's 8,400,000 species, so you get all the varieties of tastes of consciousness and engagement of the senses and, you know, rasa, all these things. In the same way, on the intellectual platform, then there's all these different philosophies that have all their breakdowns because they have all their different particular attachments. Right? Okay. So then it's just a matter of how many of these someone has. So they're all there. So generally speaking, let's say in other ages, they would have less of them. In this age, there may be more. Does that make sense? So then we go through it. And that way, then, whichever ones resonate, then those ones, then you apply. Like that. Okay. In Nyaya philosophy, both aspects of reality, the study of unmanifest reality and the study of manifest reality, are divided into 16 major divisions called padarthas. Right? So these are going to be all the different things that they're going to deal with. Right? It means how he's going to, means, as we mentioned before, discriminate valid knowledge from invalid. So how are they going to do that? They need tools. So these are the tools. Right? These 16 are the tools. Yes? So first, praman. Or the sources of valid knowledge is that through which or by which the prama, valid knowledge is received. There are four distinct sources of correct knowledge. These four pramanas are perception, pratyaksha, inference, anuman, comparison, upamana, and testimony, shabda. So he takes these four. There's 10 altogether, but of those, he's taken these 10 and shown how they fit into four. And we'll see when we go to the, call it, Tattvasandarbha, then Jiva Goswami will show how it's actually three. That this comparison is already part of one of these others, right? So basically, it all goes into anuman.
Right.
Yes.
Can we say that he actually establishes those, and then the rest of the philosophies they use it?
It means that he's thought about it, so focusing on that, then he nicely puts it together because this is all based on Veda. So the Veda is explaining all of this, and so someone by studying the whole Veda together, or, you know, known as the Atharva in this case, where there's, you haven't made the distinctions between the different Vedas, then just by studying that, they know everything because all these points are made everywhere. Right? And then you see them all together. But if you don't, then you have to break them down. So then the four Vedas are broken down, the different Shastras are then given, so that it see that the 14 branches of Vedic knowledge are then are consolidated into one place. Right? Each in their own place. But it's not that all that knowledge is not already there in the Veda. It's just those who understand these things, then they go. It's just like, okay, you have the Dhani Kravya. Right? The white horse. Right? So then Indra's white, he rides on a white horse. Okay? So there may be the element of him on a white horse, and that aspect is there, but actually, is that the main point? Right? The main point is the horse means the senses. Now, if you're riding the horse, means what's happening? You're controlling the senses. You're above the senses, you're controlling the senses. And so when we say white, what does that mean? White would be according to your duties. What's the, you know, the proper position? Right? Now, if we take it a step further, then what does that mean? For devotees, what does this mean? So white means what?
Sattva.
Yeah.
Purity. Sattva.
But we've already said that sattva is there in the middle explanation. So now what are we talking about?
Devotional service.
Devotional service, and known in this case as? means when we're talking about sattva? Vishuddha sattva. Right? And then what do we mean by the horse now? We're just controlling the senses?
Engaging.
And we're engaging them in Krishna's service. You understand? So when you understand things like this, then from anything you can get. That's the whole point. All the Vedas are only discussing pure devotional service. But they're using it through something that you can engage. And so then people, because of the secondary, they only see that aspect. Is that makes sense? So that's the difficulty. Is that that it's only seen in the external, but also all these things are there. So those who can catch it like that, then they're able to see without necessarily having to do all this breakdown. Right? But it's not that the breakdown's not there. It's just that these authors then, under the guidance of Vyasadeva, then have taken this particular branch, wherever it's mentioned in the Vedas, bringing it all together in one place, so that you have a very nice formula that can be used. And then, because it's nicely done and all that, then everybody can use it. So they all, then using their logic, then use this. Does that make sense? Then, depending upon what they want to bring out in this and that, then they may emphasize certain areas more or less, and that's what gives it its own flavor and all that. That's what makes it its own philosophy. Is that?
Jiva Goswami mentions that Upaman is a part of Anuman.
Upaman is a part of Anuman, yes. Because if you're doing comparison, we'll do that when we're doing the Anuman. Anuman means where you're giving the explanations. Right? It means I'm going to state the fact, I'm going to give the reason for the fact when I'm giving the explanations. That's when I'm going to use the comparison, I'm going to use the logical system in that. Because I've made the statement. But now I'm going to, through logic, show how that works. Right? That's why an adhikarana means an exposition of logic. Does that make sense? So that's why in the Vaishnava philosophy, it's not that you'll understand it through intelligence. It's only by the grace of the Lord. But it's not that the intelligence won't be satisfied by the logical explanation. Does that make sense? It's already included. Right? So it's just like, because you're hungry, does that mean lunch is cooked? No. But if lunch is cooked, will that satisfy your hunger? Yes. So that's the whole point. If you have Krishna consciousness, then the intelligence is already included. But if you only have the intelligence, doesn't mean devotion's included. Right? So that's the thing, that's the fine print, right? When they talk about the intellectual path, no one reads the fine print that says bhakti not included. Yeah, it's not that. Okay. So praman is then what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to apply it. So in other words, you're going to start with shabda, or the authority of the scriptures, then through inference, using the logical system, then you'll come to the point of pratyaksha where you can actually see according to that. Does that make sense?
And they start with pratyaksha and go to shabda, something like that.
That's there, but we're talking reality. But yeah, they do it backwards. Then prameya, then what is to be, or the object of knowledge which is knowable, right? So then we have praman and prameya. So the dasa mool, that's what it's dealing with. Right? So this is your essential elements that are there. So these 16, it's not that they're all the same thing. They're giving different aspects of the whole logical process. Right? So then, what are you going to discuss? You're going to discuss praman and prameya. Right? You have something that you want to gain. Right? Which is a prameya. So what will that be based on? That will be based on praman. Right? So that means shabda is the source of everything. Veda is the source of all knowledge. And so that's how it's going to work. Right? So now we get into the next part. Shamshaya, or doubt.
Pramana for us would be the Vedas.
Also for them.
I'm saying about us.
Yes.
So for us, pramana is the Vedas. And then prameya would be Krishna. That which one we want to know.
Means you would say is... in one sense, you would say it would be chit achit ishwara, how you say it? Sadhana and sadhya. This is what you want to know.
Okay, so it's all inclusive.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. These two include everything. Now, these other aspects are going to be there. They'll also have different breakdowns of how they're adding to this praman and pramaya. Right? Because the point is you have praman, but what's the point of praman unless there's pramaya, unless there's something to establish? Right? If I have authority, but there's nothing established by authority, then what's the point? So the two go together.
But this also applies not only on the big scale, but the big philosophy.
Right.
But in discussions also, you have to have your praman and you have to have your praman.
Yes.
Sometimes that's the reason people don't understand each other.
Yes, because somebody's on Facebook and somebody's not, so they don't have a common point of praman. Yeah. So then how do you discuss that? Yeah. So that's the thing. Yeah. So here is then praman, the sources, valid sources of knowledge. So the actual is shabda. Then the others are concluded in that. But if you're not into that, then you'll start with pratyaksha. And from that, then you can come, and then it gets to authority. Right? So now what's their testimony, or what is their authority? That testimony is going to be that person who has gone through this process and has understood something. So in this case, it'll be Gotama. Right? And then the Vedas, if they align with what Gotama says, then it's good for them. And if it doesn't, then they don't accept those parts. So that's the point, is that just, in other words, if you just accept what you want, don't accept what you want, then that's not complete in its philosophy. Right? Yeah. So Shamshaya, or doubt. It is the state in which the mind wavers between conflicting views regarding a single object. In a state of doubt, there are at least two alternative views, neither of which can be determined to lead to a state of certainty. Right? So that means, that it doesn't mean that it can't be, it means that it's a doubt for us, it means we can't work it out. And we may have others who can't work it out, so then you have a group of people who relate to each other in that. So that's what's the specialness about, like someone like Narad Muni. There is no contradictions in the Veda. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur points that out, Prabhupada points that out. There is no contradiction. There's no contradiction between the Vedas, between the Acharyas, all these things. They aren't there. Just we can't see it. So that's why it comes up as a doubt, and then we use a logical process to clear that. But that's why, unless you have praman or shabda, then you can't actually clear it. Because they're using the system, but because they're using the system backwards, then it won't give the same effect as if you use it forwards. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just the way it is. Prayojana, or aim, is when one acts either to achieve desirable objects or to get rid of undesirable ones. Right? You have a goal, to gain something or to get rid of something. These desirable and undesirable objects that motivate one's activities are known as prayojana, right? So we want to get rid of, the problems of the senses, the mind, all these things that are giving us trouble in Krishna consciousness. So that's a prayojana, but is that the ultimate prayojana? No. It has to be, so what is it that what the desirable is? Love for Krishna, pleasing Krishna. Therefore, then these activities are lower. So we can see as never forget Krishna is subservient to always remember. So controlling the senses, controlling the mind is subservient to being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So there's always a prayojana, so you have to see what's there. So depending upon the attitude, that's going to define which it is. Right? I have the devotional attitude, then I'm going to be seeing how to please Krishna. Let us say I'm in the attitude that I'm tired of the material energy and it's disturbing and everything like that, so then what do I see as prayojana?
Liberation.
Right? Or I find that it's a trouble that the senses can't be engaged nicely. The quality of items that I'm working with are substandard. The experience I'm gaining. So what's the goal? What am I removing?
Action.
Right?
Action.
No, that would be how I go about. But what do I want? What would this school then, what's this goal? What's it called? Karma. Right? So bhakti is about Krishna. So you're engaging you're getting rid of the problems of the material world by engaging yourself in Krishna's service. So the results of karma and jnana are already included in bhakti. Right? So therefore bhakti is a real prayojana. But karma and jnana aren't. They may be steps leading, you know, in the process of, but it's consciousness that makes it bhakti, not karma and jnana. Does that make sense? So I can't say that, oh, so these things are used in bhakti, therefore focusing on that, that is bhakti. No, it's only when you use that connected to devotional service that is bhakti. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the person is doing their job, making their money, totally absorbed in that, not doing so much devotional service like they'd like to and all this, but it's because it's all, you know, it's all for Krishna. But when will it be for Krishna? When they give the results. Otherwise, before that, at that point, it's not. Now, if they can maintain it's always for Krishna, always see the results for Krishna, or the results already is Krishna's, then you can say now they're acting in devotional service even at that point. Right? Because the result's already been gained. But when it's about getting results, my result, and then I'm giving my result to Krishna, then until you give it, then it becomes bhakti. Before that, it's karma. But it's, you know, intended to be given to Krishna. So in one sense, we in general will call it devotional service. You're a devotee engaged in devotional service. But if we want to get specific, at that point you're not. Why? Because the consciousness is not about Krishna. But once you get the money, then it will be about Krishna. Then therefore, it's considered as good as. That's why then all that work you did, you get the credit as if it's devotional service. What we're pointing out is you advance, you can be getting the credit as you're doing it rather than waiting till the end. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, which would be better, okay? And then, okay, we're cooking the chapatis, right? And we just stack them up. And then when they're all cooked, then you can get some. Or as we make them, you get hot chapatis, which is better. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is therefore Nishkam Karma Yoga is better than Sakam Karma Yoga. Because Nishkam, you're getting the benefit all the way through, from the beginning to end. Well, Sakam, you only get at the end. Okay. Yeah? You had something?
The Pramey, it's the object of knowledge. It's used only in the Nyaya school, but is it...
No, everybody uses it. It just means what you want to know.
Is it different for all the
cities? It's just like this. Okay, Facebook, that's the praman. But what's the prameya? You want to know what this person's up to these days and if they're being, you know, as skanky as you've heard they are. Right? So that's the knowable. Right? And what's the praman? Their new, you know, what do you call it? Profile photo. Right? Or what they talk about, or what they just did, or, you know, how they identify themselves, you know, what's their social status. So, you understand? Those are permitted, so that's how we're using it.
What would be the prayojana?
The prayojana is that, the taste of gossip, something to talk to someone, that I have something in my life of value that I can talk to others, therefore my life has some meaning.
And do that in the sense, yeah.
Huh?
And the doubt.
And the doubt. The doubt. Yeah.
The doubt is whether it's interesting to anybody else or not.
Yes.
That's the big doubt.
Yeah, yeah. But we can see is that you have crossed from the path of karma into the path of jnana. Yeah. So instead of from idealism into, you've gone into skepticism or pessimism. So. Like that. In other words, you have gained all this knowledge, you have spoken it to others, and you found that they weren't interested, and now this gaining your social, your happiness from the social status of knowing all the latest gossip you have found is not actually giving the result you wanted, so now you become pessimistic that there must be another path, that now we have to give up Facebook and move beyond to the liberated platform. Yes, yeah, see? Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainata Gaur Premanandi ki. So does that mean now you're the Rishi of...
now we have to post it on Facebook.
Now you have to post it.
This part of the discussion.
I read the anecdote about Facebook. And it says, since I started telling everybody on the street, showing the pictures of my kids, telling them what I had for breakfast, what did I do now, a few people are following me, two policemen, one psychiatrist, and two other social workers.
Yes, that sounds about right.
Yeah.